I'll take it in, but don't look down.
'Cause I'm on top of the world, hey. I'm on top of the world, hey. Waiting on this for a while now. Paying my dues to the dirt. I've been waiting this
long. What is going on, everybody? Welcome to JJ's Football Fix, the A-League Hour. My name is Jordan Gifkins, and alongside me is the very influential Jake White. How are you?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Great. Absolutely great on this lovely Wednesday afternoon. The weather is nice and sunny, I think. My blinds are shut.
It's like 14 degrees.
So it's episode 26, Jake, and it's the big grand final preview, sort of. I mean, I don't know how much time we're going to spend on preview on the grand final, but we've got a lot to talk about. You know, we've got the team of the season to talk about after that was announced, I believe, today or yesterday. The Dolan Warren Awards with all the award winners. A bit of FFA backlash with the clubs, with the TV rights deals, stuff like that. Jake, we have a lot to cover today, and it's been pretty good because we've had slow news realistically for probably the last 2 months of this show. We haven't had a real big discussion topics to talk about because there just hasn't been a lot to talk about, Jake, ever since, you know, the promotion relegation chatter and stuff like that. We've been very limited to what we can talk about, and we've sort of had to make things up on the spot, but could we have some topics to talk about today for once?
Yeah,
but Jake, we obviously need to talk about first and foremost the semi-finals of the A-League that happened over the last weekend, and don't we have a bit to talk about because of the obviously fantastic inception of the video review system, which reel its big head, I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but Sydney FC, they won against Perth Glory on Saturday night in the first semi-final to progress to the grand final and cement a home grand final. That is Josh Belente, Jake. He's been a revelation for Sydney FC this season, a fantastic player. Everyone knew it before he signed for Sydney that he was obviously a great player, played his trade in Italy for a bit since he was in the A-League about 2 or 3 years ago. He opened the scoring in the 21st minute with an absolute gem of a goal. Just, you know, it's a shame he doesn't do it more often because I think that was only his second ever A-League goal. And I'm pretty sure his first one we spoke about non-stop because of how good it was. And he's pretty much done it up even more on this one. So nothing wrong with that. The controversy here, Jake, the 37th and 46th minute, Jordy, I don't even know his last name, Boyce or Baus, I've never known
Baus,
and Philip Holosko. Now, Holosko, fair enough, 46th minute, he's been called offside, the review system's come into play, he was clearly onside, so I don't think anyone really complained with that. The issue here, Jordy Boyce, 37th minute. I'm sure you were there, you were in the goal, we were talking about it a little bit. I'm sure everyone, or majority of people watching, or listening, sorry, to this podcast, understands what happens in this. I don't think you can really get away from it. Basically, and it can go two ways, it can be a goal, it can be not a goal. Basically, Jordy Boyce has run through the defence. Bobo, I believe, was the player that was in the offside position, has somewhat gone for the ball. In an offside position, and he is blocking, I believe, Goyan or Djulbic, one of the two.
Yeah, Djulbic.
Essentially, you know, interpreting, just getting in the way of the game in an offside position. But Jordy Boyce ran into the ball. Essentially, Bobo didn't get involved in the play and scored the goal. Now, the issue here was the offside was called because probably in two ways, because it looked like Jordy was passing the ball to Bobo to start off with before realising it was offside and then going to get the ball. But regardless, he was sitting in the way in an offside position. Now, he was interfering with the play in a way, regardless of whether Djulbic gets the ball or not or lays a tackle. It completely doesn't really matter because he is interfering in an offside position, which is what it's there for. So I know your take on this, Jake, is that it shouldn't, or it should be, you know, called as the referee's decision is offside. I believe a vast majority of people that follow the A-League, watch the A-League, just anything to do with football in Australia, does agree with us that it should be considered offside, and it should be offside, it shouldn't have been awarded. So very controversial. Now, I was watching the Daily Football Show's Sunday edition, where they do it instead of a podcast, they do the recording and the video recording of it. And Matt Winley from the Herald Sun, I'm sure you're aware of who this is, said that when they brought the VAR system into play, said that the VAR system is there to eradicate errors that are obvious. And they said that when they brought it in, they said it's not going to be able to turn goals on its head, non-decisions are not going to be given goals by slight interpretations of the rule and stuff like that. It's to eradicate obvious errors. So the second goal, the third goal in this game, was an obvious error. He was clearly onside. But the first one is not an obvious error. Should they have overruled it at all, or even considered overruling it? Who knows? I personally think in the two states, it's an offside goal, and it wasn't an obvious error. So they've totally gone against the both things that they brought the system in for. And yeah, it's not a good look on the A-League, and it's not a good look for football in Australia at all, or in the world, if you ask me. I'd like to get your take on it, because I know you weren't very happy with it. So I'm sure you can provide a different insight into it, but yeah, it just doesn't look good for football in Australia when this happens.
It's not that it doesn't even just look good for, it doesn't look good for football in Australia, it just doesn't look good for football in general. And this is 110% nothing to do with me disliking Sydney FC or anything, because I've said on social media, said on Twitter, everything, they deserve the win, they deserve to be in the grand final, and effectively they deserve to win the title as well. But it's nothing to do with Sydney bias either. I'll always joke around saying, oh, of course Sydney are getting the rub of the green with the refs and stuff, but it's nothing to do with that, because I have a feeling if it was the other way around, it would have been the exact same result. Mm-hmm. But it's the first incident, it just shouldn't be happening, because like you said, they can't exactly overcorrect those sort of, they've even said they won't be overcorrecting those sort of situations in those incidents. The second one is 100% a goal, they've done the right thing, and that's where it's used correctly, because it's given offside, and it didn't even take 30 seconds for them to overrule it or anything like that. The person upstairs said it's goal, and it got overturned basically straight away. And that's how it should be used, 100%, because Holosko was clearly onside and it was given offside, but then they got their goal. But the first one, I'll still stand by it. I don't think Djurbic is going to get to the ball. I don't think he will. But at the same time, he's given absolutely zero chance in the slightest by an offside player to get to the ball. So effectively, it shouldn't be a goal, because he is off. He's being blocked by an offside player. They have that rule in rugby league where if you're being blocked by someone, then it's a penalty or it's a free. The other team gets the ball, whatever. Because it's not like it's AFL where you can shepherd players. It realistically, it should have been a free kick to Perth either way, because he's being blocked away from getting to the ball, and you can't do that. So it's technically you can, but at the same time, the way that Bobo was doing it, you can't do it in that sort of instance. And he's an offside player blocking a player trying to get to the ball. So it shouldn't even be a goal in general. I don't know what's going through Strebo Delofsky's mind when he's upstairs and he says that it's a goal, because realistically, an offside player is blocking a player that's trying to get to the ball. So it shouldn't even be a factor of if Djurbic is going to, if it happens 5 metres further away, then fair enough. But nobody 110% knows if Djurbic is going to get to that or not. I don't think he would.
But they can't determine it.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like they have a radar on him on how fast he was going to be travelling and all that stuff. There's not that sort of technology in the game, but
I just figure that out.
I just don't agree in general, and I said it when it first came in. I said it when it was first used in the last round of the season as well, and I'll say it now, I don't agree with the fact that VAR is in football in general. goal line technology, yes, that works perfectly fine. The ref's got a ref has a watch and it tells him immediately if it's a goal or not. Like, that is perfect. Like, it works well. It's quick. The ref literally just has to look at a watch, and if it's a goal, it's a goal. If it's not a goal, it's not a goal. But turning it in, and I love the NRL, but turning it into the NRL where the camera's on the ref and he has to make a TV screen saying that he's going to, like, the video ref and stuff like that, and then we have to wait, like, 30 seconds and stuff like that for the video ref to work that out, and then, like, it just takes the emotion completely out of the game. Because,
no, I agree.
Yeah, just because the main, and I hate it when it happens. Don't get me wrong, I've had plenty of time supporting Victory over the last 12 years, and a lot of other fans across the A-League would have the exact same thing that I will say as well, where Victory have been stuffed over by referee decisions, and it happens to literally everyone. But at the same time, we're completely taking out human error out of football, which is in a way good because it means that everything is fair and everything's happening the way it should. But at the same time, if you take the emotion out of football, then what's left? The pure, like, there's nothing, no one can describe how they feel after a goal goes in and you're sitting around with your mates and you're going absolutely nuts. But I know Sydney FC fans that I was talking to after the game, and they were sitting there with a video ref decision going up, and then it came up goal, and they felt, literally, they said that it felt like the NRL. They're like, oh, yeah, sweet, we scored a goal.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that's not what football is. Football's a game of one goal can be scored, and it's that could be it. Like, you don't want it coming across like AFL where a goal scored. You know, supporters are happy, but it's not like jubilation.
In the NRL and the AFL, it works because the NRL and the AFL are both two sports where it's sort of stop-start anyway. Like,
and it's more high, and it is more high-scoring.
Yeah, exactly. And it's sort of stop-start and all that stuff. But in football, like, it's not a very stop-start game in the slightest. Like, it's a very free-flowing sort of game. And when you take the free-flowing out of the game and you're sitting there stopping, looking up at a TV screen for like a minute waiting for a video referee decision and stuff like that, and especially when the first one that they say, they make the wrong decision, like, what it just doesn't make sense. And it's not just me speaking on behalf of Australian football as well, because it's meant to be coming into the Confederations Cup as well, I'm pretty sure. And it was in the Club World Cup as well. So it's coming in all around the world, and I think it just takes the pure emotion out of football, and it just doesn't work. I understand why we've brought it in. Like, 100%, I understand why it's being brought in, why it's being tested, but I just don't think it should be a permanent thing, in my opinion, because, like, this weekend in Sydney, what if, like, I know it'll help the team that deserves to win the title and stuff, but what if a decision happens and it's like 118th minute or whatever, and then the goal's decided by a video referee decision? Like, as good as it may be, because it may be the right decision, like, it would completely take the pure emotion out of your team winning in like the last minute to win a grand final and stuff. Like, it wouldn't be as good as what it could be.
Yeah.
So, like, I understand that it is something that could work, but until they have like a robot that can give them an immediate decision if it's a goal or not, then I just don't.
Not like
think goal
line technology.
Yeah.
Yeah, goal line technology is fair enough. I'm a big fan of goal line technology. Yes. That should be the last technology they add to football. World football needs to stay the same. Like, I wrote on your status when you were writing about the decision. I said, don't fix something that isn't broken. You don't need to fix something that's not broken. And football's not broken. Yes, there is, you know, incorrect calls, like, every so often. It happens in every sport in the world. I don't understand why football felt a need to eradicate these things and risk the atmosphere and the emotion of a football match dropping just to make sure that the decision is right.
If they want to do certain things, there's plenty of referees around Australian football. So if they want to do certain things to make sure they get certain decisions right for goals, do what they do in the Champions League and have a goal sitting on the goal line.
Well, yeah, that's what they should have done.
Because if there's someone on the goal line, they see that, like, offside decision being given for the second for Boyish's goal, whatever his name is, and they see that the defender is being blocked by a player that's in an offside position. And they would either stand up for that or they would say, no, it's fine. Like, there was a decision in the Champions League final a few years ago where Neymar scored a goal, but in the lead-up to the goal, the ball hit his hand. So the ref on the line overruled it, and it was given a no goal, which was the right decision. Like, you don't need to stop-start football. It's like they're referees for a reason. As bad as referees can be at stages as well, because we've sat here and slated refs for a very, very long time this season. But it just, like I said, the main thing that separates football from other sports for me is the pure emotion of fans and stuff like that, and all the fans getting into it, and the scenes when teams score goals and everything like that. And then when you take that out of football, then, like I said before, what's left?
Mm.
So, but yeah, it was a good win from Sydney as well. Like, we haven't really talked too much on the game. We talked about that decision, but it was a very good win from Sydney. They were professional. Perth were very unlucky. Keogh missed a really good chance, and Castro was unlucky in stages as well. And I'm sure we'll get onto it later about the state of the pitch. Because if the pitch is decent, then Castro keeps his feet and probably finishes one goal. But at the same time, Sydney had a very similar situation as well. So Sydney were the better team. They fully, fully deserve to be hosting grand final this Sunday.
Yeah, we can go on and on about, you know, the review system, like the deficiencies and stuff within soccer. But realistically, Sydney were the better team. They deserve their spot. And that's that. We'll move on to the second semi-final here. Victory hosting Brisbane Roar. An interesting game of football. I don't think it was too open. I think Jamie Young was very good. Surprisingly took his place in the lineup. Yeah, Berisha, 70th minute, scoring for Melbourne Victory. Good goal, really good goal. And that's all she wrote, a 1-0 win for Victory. They will travel to Sydney to play at the grand final on Sunday afternoon, Jake. Brisbane, I can't say I watched this game. Unfortunately, I was partaking in a game of my own. So I can't really comment too much. So I'll leave most of this to you, but...
I got kicked out half on.
I didn't even watch the highlights, to be honest. I saw the goal. That's about really all.
Oh, I watched it.
I saw a little bit of what Jamie Young, but a few saves he made off Rojas in particular. Rojas, by the way, unbelievable techers. But yeah, just, yeah, a 1-0 win for Victory. Jake, your take on the game?
Yeah, well, like I said, I got kicked out half time, but I did watch the replay on Monday because I don't really think my take on the game when I was there would have been a great take anyway, because can't really say that I saw too much of it in the first half either. Yeah, did get a bit intoxicated, but it was actually a weird game. I don't think we really truly deserved to win it in the 90. We were the better team. We had a lot of chances. And I'll tell you what, when Rojas wants, he can be an absolute baller. Have you seen that video of him flicking it behind Corey
Brown? I'm sure everyone's seen it. It's unbelievable.
It's ridiculous. And his touch as well, when it was like behind him and then he touched it and then had a shot at Jamie Young. But Jamie Young, it was basically straight at Jamie Young. Yeah. And in all fairness, Jamie Young had a very, very good game. He had a lot of... people had a lot of eyes on him because of what happened in Thailand with his arm and stuff like that. So he would have been, I reckon, a little bit nervous about making dives maybe down to his right. But, yeah, he had a very, very good game. And I guess Berisha, he always steps up the big stage when it matters and got the important goal. But it was a game that was sort of won and lost in the midfield, I reckon. There was a very good battle in the first half between both midfields, but then I think Victory's midfield just had a bit too much strength for Brisbane, and that's why they brought on Mackay after an hour, because Victory were really starting to get on top at that stage, and which is a bit harsh to Coletti, but I think Coletti was a little bit out of his depth in this game.
That's where I'll correct you, Jake. Mackay actually started this game.
Oh, yes, Coletti came on and Mackay was taken off, yes. But Coletti, like I was talking to Bruce McFan after the game, and Coletti was very much so out of his depth after he came on. And I think, like, I don't know, I think he's one of those players, and you always want your sort of younger players, I think, starting, because if a player like Coletti comes on in the 60th minute into a semi-final with Victory's midfield starting to really get on top, I think it was just a bit of a barrage and they did start targeting. So, but yeah, like I said,
I want to bring that point though. Just, okay, so there's a lot of scrutiny on Melbourne City last week for their selection in the team. I want to mention Brisbane. Now, Victory, Sydney, I believe Perth all played, you know, their normal starting 11, their expected starting 11. Brisbane, from what I can gather from the lineup, opted to start McLaren or Holman and Borrello. Borrello starting in a more central midfield role. And they rushed Mackay back in. I'm not even sure if Mackay was 100% fit, but he started in that deep sort of lying centre midfield role. Do you think, considering Coletti had started pretty much like every single week for the previous 10 weeks or so, do you think Coletti should have started this game alongside Mackay in sort of a left centre midfield role, and one of or Holman or Borrello came off the bench? Or do you reckon it was the right decision? I mean, in hindsight, it's easy to say Coletti was out of his depth when he came on the field. But pre-game, if you looked at the lineups and you're a Brisbane supporter, do you think Coletti deserves to start this game, just considering how much he's done to help Brisbane get to the stage that they are?
Yeah, well, of course. I think 100% he deserves to start. In all fairness to Brisbane, they do have a very strong sort of midfield lineup. With like that, well, looking at their lineup right now, they had players like Borrello, Mackay, or Holman, Christensen. I think Orr was very lucky to start because I don't think he's been too good this season. So maybe you start Borrello where Orr was, and then you put Coletti in there or someone like that. So it was a very interesting.
Even Broich.
Even Broich. Broich has been one of the best A-League players in history. So I was very surprised when I saw Brisbane's lineup, because that did, I was not confident in the slightest going into the game. But seeing Brisbane's lineup did give me a little bit more confidence going into it, because they just didn't. I think I know they didn't really take a strong side there, but I think the fact that they had a very long, draining 120 minutes against Western Sydney the week before, and then they had the Champions League during the week and stuff, I think it just took them out of it. And Victory had a very similar situation a few years ago when we played Brisbane in a semi-final as well. We had a fair few good players sitting on the bench for that game as well. So it's difficult, because I don't want to sit here and slate the FFA, but FFA don't really guarantee big squads for the A-League and stuff. So you've got a very heavy workload as well as an A-League player. So it's difficult, but yeah, I reckon Coletti should have started, especially with what I said, like a young player. I think he needs to start that sort of game instead of getting thrown into it now, in, because that was when Victory was starting to really get on top as well.
Yep, so as we said, Sydney 3-0 over Perth, Victory 1-0 over Brisbane. Sydney will host Victory in the A-League final on Sunday. A little surprise, really, that this is going to be the grand final of the A-League this season. 1v2, pretty much the two best teams in the league all season long. And yeah, Jake.
Jordan.
The JJ's Football Fix Player of the Season Award, mate.
Yep.
This one, a much very interesting award to give out, considering we lost all the votes. I can sit here and announce the winner. I can't tell you the order of the top five or anything like that. But I can tell you the winner of the award. The season drum roll, please. There's a man taking part in this week's grand final for the away side. Marco Rojas wins.
I thought you were going to say Rashid Mahathi.
Oh, stiff second. Marco Rojas wins our Player of the Season award. If you haven't been listening all season, we do award the votes in a 3-2-1 system after each round of the A-League season. We've been doing it all season long, I believe. I'm trying to think. We started the four rounds into the season, so
we did
three rounds. I'm not sure if we gave out votes for the first three rounds, but Borjas dominated the first three rounds anyway, so he probably still would have won regardless. So yeah, that's that. Jake, like we said, we've got a few things to talk about today. I reckon now we'll kick on to the PFA Team of the Year. And let's discuss it, because we've got the team here, and we'll quickly go over it. We'll give our thoughts on each position, what we think about players making it, what we think about players missing out on it. It's a strong team, don't get me wrong. There is a few interesting decisions that has been made in regards to a bench, especially the player on the bench making the team. But we'll start in goals. I don't think there's going to be too much controversy with the decision here. Danny Vukovic, not only named as the goalkeeper, but also the captain of the team. That's a little controversial. I think probably fair enough, though. But Danny Vukovic, goalkeeper of the season. He's back up Liam Reddy on the bench. That's a little bit controversial. personally would have had one of Lawrence Thomas or Paul Izzo ahead of him. But, I mean, Reddy was pretty good this season. They had a few very good games. Think back to Melbourne City, not the one in Perth, but the one in Melbourne. Any thoughts on those?
I just got up the PFA Team of the Season for 2013. So,
Who made that one?
I reckon that's fair enough. Vukovic 100% can't question him being a goalkeeper. He's been above and beyond the best keeper in the league this season. And the second keeper's, I reckon, a bit, it's questionable. Like, I think Reddy's definitely been good this season, but at the same time, like you said, Thomas and Izzo have both been reasonably good as well. So, I'm not going to worry about who's on the bench as a goalkeeper for PFA Team this season, but like, I reckon it could have gone to anyone out of Reddy, Thomas and Izzo.
Defenders, Jake. Right back, Ryan Grant. Centre backs, Alex Wilkinson and Michael Jakobsen. Left back, Michael Zulo. I'm not going to sit here and say that's wrong. I think that's probably spot on, the four best defenders in the league this season. On the bench, Jade North. I want to sit here and complain about that. Probably Luke Devere, maybe a bit stiff here, to maybe miss out on a bench spot to Jade North. I'm trying to think of other ones. There wasn't too many centre-backs wing-backs that stood out a whole lot this season.
Yeah, not really.
So I'm going to go ahead and say that back four's probably odds on the best back four this year.
Yeah, I can't really fault that too much, I reckon. I reckon if I was to be biased, I'd say Donaghy could potentially make the bench. But I think the back four is spot on. If Jakobsen doesn't get injured, then he's 110% in that back four. I think that's the only question mark, potentially. But Jakobsen was fantastic anyway when he was on form. So, I can't really question any of that back four as well.
We mentioned Jade North, the controversial figure on the bench. They did make the sort of the defenders category of this team. Rion Tongic. We are led to believe that they're meant to have two under 20 players in the team of the season. So in that regards, yeah, potentially, probably of the under 20 players in the league, he would have been one of the better ones. In saying that, though, he's against the likes of Joe Coletti was another option for that as well. Aspro, maybe? I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, well, I'm not 100% sure how old Aspro is. I'm pretty sure he's like 18 or 19 anyway. So,
yeah.
But I'm just looking through the team of the season from a few years ago for the A League, and there's no players there that are under the age of 20. So
maybe it's their ploy to, you know, give youth a boost or some shit. We'll move on from the defence. Midfielders, Brandon O'Neill, Milos Ninkovic, James Troisi. No complaints whatsoever. absolute jets this season. On the bench in the midfield, Josh Berlente and Riley McGree falls under the under 20 category. In regards to that four, not McGree, I think yes, 100%. McGree, yeah. even then, you know, Socceroos.
If it wasn't for McGree, then Adelaide would have finished last one.
100%.
He was above and beyond their best player of the season, so I think he deserves it.
Yeah. But O'Neill, obviously, fantastic this season. And that sort of deep midfield role. It didn't score too many, but he did score a couple of free kicks, which was interesting for a defensive mid to be taking them, especially in a such a star-studded Sydney side with the likes of Ninkovic, Bobo, you know, such classy attacking players, and then you get your deep line midfielder to take free kicks. But I don't know, it is what it is. He's obviously very good at them. Ninkovic, like I just said, such a classy player. We'll get onto him in the awards section soon. Arguably the best player in the league. I mean, he was this season. And I don't know how old he is. I don't know what he's going to do next season. But it would be a massive loss if he wasn't in the A-League next season, because he is just so good. And James Troisi as well. Obviously, sort of iffy the last few years since he left Melbourne Victory. He's come back. He's got himself back in the Socceroos frame. More so even as a starting Socceroo than just a fringe Socceroo now, so which is very good for him. And like we've mentioned this season, it'd be very dumb if he decides to go up and leave for Europe or Asia or anything, because he's easily produced his best career form while playing for Melbourne Victory, and it'd be very smart to stick around for at least another season.
Yeah, 100%.
Any thoughts
on that? I don't know if there's any players that really missed out, to be honest. One player, I think, if he kept some consistency up all season, I reckon could have made it, was Luke Bratton.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But other than that, I reckon they've probably got that spot on as well, but they've definitely not got the forward line spot on.
Well, I mean, Rojas, Berisha and Diego Castro make
the starting forward line, I agree with, 100%.
So we get a bit further on that. obviously, we'll quickly just talk about Rojas. We had him as our player of the season on JJ's Football Fix. Only came sixth in the Johnny Warren medal, interestingly, because he, you know, for a lot of the season was tipped to be in contention with Ninkovic for that award. Obviously, Ninkovic probably finished the season a bit better. Berisha, joint Golden Boot winner. Fair enough, makes a starting lineup. Very good all season. Brought up his 100th goal a couple of weeks ago, the first player to do so in the A-League, so he's been a fantastic player for Victory, for Brisbane, and a massive part of the A-League success, somewhat success. And Diego Castro, Mercurial, which is fantastic for Perth this season, and who knows what he's doing next season, just another one of those players that you just don't know, and you know, for the A-League's sake, again, like Ninkovic, I hope he does stick around, because he is a fantastic player. And he came second to the Johnny Warren medal. It's when we get to the bench where things get a little interesting. Jake, two attackers were named. I'll name the first one, Alex Brosk. Now, he was very good this season, don't get me wrong. Is he good enough for the team of the season? Maybe, maybe not. Sydney FC, fantastic team. Would you have him ahead of the likes of Bobo from Sydney, though? Questionable. That's just the first question mark on this forward line. Bruno Fornaroli, Jake, has made the bench for the team of the season. A man that scored pretty much half, even more than his goal tally this season from the penalty spot. It's criminal to have him ahead of a player like Jamie McLaren, who, yes, wasn't the best this season, but he's won the Golden Boot. I mean, how can you not have the Golden Boot winner in the team of the season? It doesn't make any sense.
Literally.
You have the likes, and even Andy Keogh, I would have ahead of Fornaroli. Taggart, I'd have had ahead of Fornaroli. Brendan Santelab, I've had ahead of Fornaroli. I'm not sure where they pulled this one from. It is no doubt Fornaroli's been a shadow of himself from last season. So, I mean, I just don't know, Jake. This one has bamboozled both of us. I'm sure people looking at it thinking, what has happened here? Yeah, look, they had to fit
it in. It literally makes no sense.
I mean, they've got two Melbourne City players in there, obviously, as well, or three Melbourne City players in there. Well-renowned that they love Melbourne City. Jakobsen, fair enough. Tongik and Fornaroli, questionable. They just wanted to put him in, I guess. No idea. But yeah, I mean, this is a very interesting one, Jake.
Yeah, it literally makes no sense to the slightest. Not to have Jamie McLaren. The front three in the starting team, personally, I agree with 100%. But Jamie McLaren should quite easily be making the bench. I don't know on what basis they've picked Fornaroli over Jamie McLaren at all. Like, every single, apart from maybe assists, I'm not 100% sure, but everything else you look at, you reckon Jamie McLaren deserves that because he's, I wouldn't say he's got worse players around him because Brisbane went further than what Melbourne City went this season, but they just, Fornaroli's been getting service from players like Kamau, Bratton, Caceres, Cahill, Colazzo, Brandan all season. So, and he's still not scored more goals than what McLaren has. So, yeah, I don't understand how a player can win a Golden Boot and not make the season, team of the season.
Who would you have ahead if you had a personal thing? Let's say Brosk. Does Brosk, for one, make your team?
Yeah.
All right, so let's say Fornaroli out. Who comes in? McLaren?
Yeah,
fair enough. Jake, the last player we'll mention here, or not player, sorry, person, Graham Arnold, was named as the coach of the team. Can't complain, really. But yeah, that's the team of the season. What are your thoughts? We'll get your thoughts first and foremost. The first 11, the starting 11 in the team of the season. I personally think it's probably spot on, to be honest.
I can't complain. with this. The only question mark I'd possibly have is Jakobsen. Like, Jakobsen was class when he was playing and his injury did stop him, but that's the thing. Like, he did, like, I don't remember him doing too much post December, realistically. So that's the only question mark. Like, he was above and beyond, in my opinion, the best defender in the league come late December, but I think since then, he didn't really do too much to justify him being in the team of the season. But at the same time, there's not too many other players that stand out other than maybe De Vere or Donicky or North that could potentially sneak into that team.
The Dolan Warren Awards were hosted on Monday night. Basically, the AFL's equivalent of the Brownlow, the AFL's equivalent of the Brownlow Medal of the AFL. Will the big players get recognised, etc., etc. Jake, the Johnny Warren medalist was Mihalos Nikovic. No surprise there. Best player in the league this season, leading Sydney to a grand final and a record-breaking season for them. I'm not going to go over the W League because
relevant.
Jay McLaren, NAB Young Footballer of the Year. We mentioned all the nominees, you know, Aspro, Borello. Who else was in there? McGree. A few other guys were named in as nominated for the Footballer of the Year, NAB Young Footballer of the Year. McLaren gets it. The last year he can be nominated for it as he is 23 next season. So
he's played like 90 games in the A-League and he still wins Young Player.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's probably not going to be in the A-League next season. Hopefully, he's playing in Europe and playing, not just in Europe, but playing.
Or for Melbourne Victory.
Either or. A-League Coach of the Year, Graham Arnold. Oh, first of all, NAB Young Footballer of the Year. You agree, McLaren, of the nominees?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, 100%.
And Nikovic for the Johnny Warren.
Yes, unfortunately.
Yep. Coach of the Year, Graham Arnold.
Yeah, we already went over that. Yeah, He's a great player. Great coach.
The Golden Boot went to Berisha and McLaren, as everyone already knows. The National Youth League Golden Boot went to Pierce Waring of Melbourne Victory. For people that aren't aware of him, he was the man that scored in the Under-17s World Cup as a 15-year-old, I believe.
Yeah, he will be in the A-League 100% in the next 1 or 2 years.
Mm, big raps on him. The A-League goalkeeper of the year, Danny Vukovic.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've gone over that. Goal of the year, Tim Cahill against Victory, I believe.
Yeah, it's difficult to... Like, there were a lot of decent goals this year, but it's difficult to really pinpoint
one better than
the
that
goal
one.
That can outshine a volley from, like, 40 yards out top corner. Yeah.
Just quickly over these ones. The A-League Fair Play Award, Central Coast Mariners. No idea what they give that for. Probably just because they're all young, they don't want to pipe up.
No, it's for yellow cards and red cards.
All right. A-League Referee of the Year, Jared Gillette. Or Gillette.
Yeah, he just got the A-League Grand Final gig as well.
And the Community Champion Award, Melbourne Victory, for their work in the community. Jake.
You'd just, think that'd be what for?
Just the one I want to talk about. I just mentioned it pre-podcast to you. The Foxtel National Youth League Player of the Year, Mark Tokic, from the FFA Centre of Excellence. Jake, please fathom why they're getting rid of the FFA Centre of Excellence when the player that wins the Player of the Year in the Youth League against every other player that's supposed to be the future of Australian football in this country comes from the Centre of Excellence, which they are shutting down.
I wish that I could tell you. Literally, that doesn't make any sense at all.
We've seen a lot.
I'm sure there's probably a lot of great play. Like, I'm not exactly... Einstein when it comes up to like who has come out of the Centre of Excellence and stuff, but it obviously helps develop young Australian footballers. So all it's going to do is probably hamper how young Australian footballers develop.
I'll give you a bit of a taste of who came out of it.
Give me a taste.
As far as recently, I believe Alex Gerschbach came out of it alongside Joe Coletti. They were both in it.
Kernan Espendola.
Yeah, he actually was. Trent Sainsbury, Nathan Burns, James Holland, Matthew Spiranovic, Dario Vidicic, Nikita Rukavica, Robbie Cruz, Mark Milligan, Carl Valeri, Matt Mackay, Alex Brosk, Jade North, Josh Kennedy, Luke Wilkshire, Mark Bresciano, Vince Grella, Brett Emerton, Lucas Neal, Mark Viduka, John Aloisi, Kevin Musket, Craig Moore. Then we're going a bit further back here, but you get the gist. So yeah. They're all, big players in Australian football. All came out of the Centre of Excellence. It's just, I don't know.
It upsets me because it honestly, this time a year ago, I was buzzing. I was like, Australian football's in a good place. We're starting to take strides forward. And in all fairness, the Socceroos, I think you're in a reasonably good space where they've got good young players coming through the system, and I can't see the Socceroos missing a World Cup for a very, very long time. But that's another step backwards in FFA decisions, because I'm not going to sit here. I promise you I'm not going to sit here and go on a rant about the FFA, but they have got no idea what they're doing when it comes to running football in this country, as I'm sure we'll talk about in the next few minutes as well, about a certain meeting that took place in the last few days as well.
Well, we'll talk about that now, Jake, now that you brought it up. I was still looking through the players that came through the Centre of Excellence. And there's a lot of young players that are probably future Socceroo players as well, just having a look through the more recent squads, like D'Agostino came through it as well. They got a very good system there. It's a shame it's going to be closed down. But Jake, yep, as you mentioned, the FFA held a meeting with the clubs of the A-League. I believe there were representatives from the NPL, the W-League, and the National Youth League there, which was obviously linked in with the A-League teams. This was regarding the TV money and how much each club's going to get, or each body's going to get from the TV rights. Obviously, there was a big talk about the new TV deal last year. I think it was, or early this year, with Fox Sports. worth $56.7 million a year to the FFA, which is a huge amount of money considering what we've been on before. The thing is with this is prior to this, the clubs are on about $2.6 million per club, I believe, prior to this deal going through. Now, this is obviously a massive jump. I think it went up like a $20 million jump or something like that on the previous deal per year. They've only increased the amount given to each club by $600,000 despite a $20 million upgrade per year from the TV rights. Now, we were talking about EPL before this, just comparing it to the EPL, and I think you mentioned, well, you don't have an exact statistic or anything, but the EPL, the clubs get an absolute dick ton of money. And that's not just based on, you know, viewing rights in England, but also around the world.
The fact and obviously they get a lot of, like, obviously the FA get a lot of money than what the FFA do, but, like, the FA, it's well known that the FA pile every single bit of coin that they earn through TV rights and everything else, they pile every single bit of that into clubs. They don't pile it into anything else other than the clubs. So that's the difference.
Mm.
Now, what are the FFA going to do with this money?
Well, that's it. I mean, if we're just looking at it per year, the FFA is about $25 million a year or something like that. Which is, what do they do with that? What can they do with that? They can at least give an extra, like, at least an extra mil to each club. And they'll still be making, as an organisation, without, you know, having the clubs involved, what, 15 mil? Just from the TV rights alone?
Yeah, exactly.
Look, I mean, the headline from this meeting was the fact that the clubs walked out of the meeting. They said they couldn't come to an agreement. The Adelaide United chairman, Greg Griffin, who is sort of speaking on behalf of all the clubs, probably because they all just fucked off and he was the only one left, said basically the clubs had unanimously turned down an increased annual distribution of $3.25 million. You know, saying it's barely going to cover the wage of the players and the staff at each club, and that's fair enough. 3.25 mil, it seems like a lot of money, but if you try, you know, distribute that up between all the players and the staff, and thinking about the coach as well and stuff like that, they need more money than that.
Yeah,
way more money than that.
100%.
And this is part of the reason why each club owner, or the club owners of each club, aren't making a profit, because they're not receiving the money back from the TV rights and everything like that. Like, the FFA is literally just being greedy about all the money.
Yeah, of course.
And like, you look at the A-League, I'm sorry, the EPL, and a lot of the people that invest money into the clubs in the EPL do make a return. They make money because the TV rights deal there is massive. But in saying that, they get the money from the TV rights to actually make a profit, despite going out and spending a fuck ton of money on players, fuck ton of money on player wages, on coaches, on... Like, there is so much more money involved in the EPL. Yeah, but they are spending so much on their players, on their coaches, and stuff like that. And we have a salary cap of... What is... I don't even know what the salary cap is, but it's bullshit.
Well, you know what's funny? Well, it's not really funny. It pissed me off. But the exact same thing happened when David Gallop was in charge of the NRL.
I've heard this.
There's a lot of money getting pumped into the NRL, and the club's got a little increase on what was happening, like with the TV money and stuff. And then the whole salary cap thing happened with the Storm. So the only reason why the clubs were sort of content was because the Storm had to pay $10 million out to the remaining 15 clubs all individually. So all the other 15 clubs were very content because they were still getting a certain amount of increase, but the only reason they were content was because the Storm were paying them. They weren't content because the NRL and all that were paying them. It's because the Storm were, and that was David Gallop's decision to get the Storm to pay other clubs when he basically the NRL took every single bit of that coin in. So he's done the exact same thing over another code as well.
He's just not good for the sport at all. I just found a few numbers here. So the A-League salary cap this season was $2.6 million. Under the terms, the salary cap is actually rising next season to $2.92 million. So hopefully, you know, with that extra $302,000 or whatever it is, $320,000, we can see maybe an extra player. basically, so if you want to put that down, they get $3.25 million. $3.25 million per club.
Mm-hmm.
When the salary cap next season is $2.92 million. So the salary cap is just players alone. That does not include staff or anything else. So essentially, each club has less than they have $2.5 million. $2.5 million to spend. Oh no, $3 million to spend on everything else, and that's from the TV rights. So the big dilemma, like I said, is they want more money. The clubs, they obviously deserve more money. The FFA are being greedy. And that's that. It's fair enough. I believe it was a good decision for them to walk out.
That's ridiculous.
David Gallop actually said in a statement on Tuesday, it was hardly surprising that the owners of the clubs want more money.
What does he expect?
We are providing them with more money after reducing FFA's own costs significantly, despite them still having $25 million. But the FFA board also have a responsibility to the 1.1 million participants in community football and our national team program. Mm. The national team program, they're literally just getting rid of the Centre of Excellence, which is a national team program, by the way. The only way we can provide the clubs with more money is to cut more funding to the grassroots and junior and senior national teams, and we do not believe that is in the interest of football in this country.
Which completely goes against their Centre of Excellence.
Exactly. The Centre of Excellence was put in place to produce Socceroos players. They probably are. Alex Gershbach and Joe Coletti literally came to the top of my head as Centre of Excellence players. Gershbach's in and around the Socceroos squad. Coletti will undoubtedly be around the Socceroos squad at some point in his career. So it's an interesting predicament.
You're fucking telling me.
It's a very frustrating predicament. Realistically, I don't think that David Gallop has this sorted out at all. I think he has a certain wage, and the people around him have a certain wage, and they're not going to cut those. They'd rather cut football in this country than cut their own wage, which is very annoying. But it is concerning, and it is real concerning the fact that we haven't got rid of David Gallop. How do we get rid of David Gallop? Can we do that? Is that possible?
We could shoot him.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Jake, the world is catching.
It's not fun. And that
it's
thing
not.
Said
it's very fucking frustrating because there's literally, I see things like I saw last week with football being the number one played sport in the country and everything. So it's there.
By about 500,000 people.
It is literally right there in front of everyone's eyes that football's growing dramatically. And the only thing that is stopping football growing in this country is the people in charge of football in this country.
Jake, the only reason I can see the Centre of Excellence, we'll just quickly go back to that topic for a sec. The only reason I can see Centre of Excellence disbanding is because I'm led to believe that there is going to be genuine academies for each A-League club. So I'm talking like as low as the under-10s or under-9s or whatever they have, all the way up to under-16s and under-18s, and then at the National Youth League, sort of what they have now, where it's like pretty much an under-21s system. So that I'm pretty sure that's coming in place. If I'm not mistaken, they've already got something like that in Perth and Sydney, I think. It's coming to Melbourne Victory and Melbourne City. Obviously, we were speaking about it, I think, last week, or we said we were going to talk about it this week, last week's episode, how Melbourne City and Melbourne Victory have applied for NPL licenses through the under 12s, under 14s, under 16s, and under 18s. Which is very, very good because they've already obviously got an under 20s and a seniors license. So it'd be good if they could provide sort of teams for every single level of NPL competition. I've been reading a lot about that, by the way, and I think it's a really good decision that they have that, because obviously they get the best talent and they nurture that from a younger age, which is sort of what soccer has been lacking, is players coming through at a younger age.
100%.
Especially in the A-League. Obviously, don't get a lot of young players representing the Socceroos in the A-League.
Well, that's where I think Ange Postecoglou has been so good for the Socceroos, is because he's been, I think, the only Australian manager since probably Gus Hiddink who's been willing to give young players a genuine crack at representing their country.
Mm.
So that's where Ange Postecoglou has been so good. But at the same time, there's only so much Ange Postecoglou is going to be able to do about youth development in Australia.
Jake, I want you to say right now, one player, before we move on to the preview, just a quickish preview of the grand final. Who's been your breakout player for you this season that can really push on and represent Australia in the near-distant future in the A-League?
A breakout player as in he didn't break out before this season, or someone who's really pushed himself?
Really, you know, accelerated his ability to maybe push for our Socceroos and cement himself in A-League like squads and stuff like that.
I'll give you two. I'll give you one. I'll just say Jamie McLaren, obviously. Like, I know he was already there last season. He already went nuts last season, but this season, like, there's always, with a lot of strikers around the world, there's always like a sort of second season syndrome where, is he that good? Like, will he, was last season just a one-off or something like that? And he pushed on this season. I know he had a little bit of a sticky patch, but he pushed on, come equal golden boot with Bessart Berisha, and he's really staked his claim that he could be Australia's next genuine striker to score a lot of goals for Australia. So I'll give that to Jeremy McLaren. And another player, like I mentioned earlier, and I know you've got massive raps on him as well, is Riley McGree from Adelaide United. There's also Coletti as well, but I'd give it to Riley McGree just because he was playing in a much worse team. So it was always going to be a bit harder for him to stand out when his team's losing basically every week. But yeah, he was very good for Adelaide.
Yeah, I can't disagree. I just want to put a name out there, Brandon O'Neill. I think we're going to be seeing him in the Confederations Cup, if I'm honest.
I hope so. He's a very fucking good player.
Yeah. Personally speaking, Jake, when McGree got caught up, I actually would have preferred to see O'Neill than McGree. But I think Postecoglou was making a statement with McGree, and he also understood O'Neill. It'd be probably beneficial for O'Neill to keep playing in such a successful team week in, week out.
Yeah.
And McGree, you know, with Adelaide obviously struggling, felt it was good to, you know, give him a reward for, you know, getting himself into the A-League team.
I gave the biggest rap I could give O'Neill possibly a few weeks ago because I could not despise enough if Melbourne Victory were to ever sign anyone from Adelaide United, Melbourne City or Sydney FC, but I would take Brandon O'Neill in an absolute heartbeat. And I've never said that about anyone. I didn't say that about players like Dwight York or Del Piero or Sergio Van Dijk or Tim Cahill or Fornaroli or anything. I wouldn't have them in the slightest. But Brandon O'Neill is just one of those defensive midfielders that he genuinely does not miss a pass. Like, he just sits there in that hole, makes the tackles, passes it off, does his job without a fuss in the world. He's a very good player.
Let's talk about the grand final. We haven't got long left in the podcast, but let's talk about the grand final quickly. No surprises, Jake, that this is the grand final this year. Realistically, 1v2, you know, Sydney record-breaking team, one loss in 27 games. Victory came second, only by 7 points to third place Brisbane, but they were never really contested for that second position on the table.
Yeah, sort of just linked into the finals.
Yeah. I haven't really got any statistics or anything like that. Obviously, we can look back to Sydney's last grand final, which was a victory in 2014, I think.
15.
15? 3-0 victory. I was there, so that was
That was fun.
I'm not going this week. You're obviously going, which is very exciting. Yeah.
Thank you.
But yeah, obviously Sydney are favourites. It's going to be tough for victory. They've gone over there twice this season and haven't got the Chockies. So it's going to be hard. Sydney, easily the best team in the league. It would be something very funny and maybe eye-opening for the FFA should Sydney not win the grand final. But it's, I believe it's going to be a very big game. And I'm very excited to watch this on Sunday night.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. I'll say straight off the bat, I think Sydney will win. It's not like I'm going into the game thinking we've got absolutely no chance, because any team that has players like Berisha, Rojas, Troisi, Kalfala, they can all just go bang, and if they all click on the same day, you just never know what could happen. But if you look at Sydney FC all season, they've been first at the end of round one, and they were first at the end of round 27, and they were first at the end of every single round between those as well. They've been superb, and they deserve every single bit of accolades that they get this season. And like you said, it'll be very interesting to see the repercussions of the FFA and stuff if they don't win the title, because they deserve it 100%. But at the same time, we're Melbourne Victory. Like, we know how to step up on a big stage. We have players that always step up on a big stage, and I think people were I think Sydney FC will win, but I think people are sort of forgetting who our manager is. It's Kevin Muscat, and he would not at all appreciate any player coming off the pitch on Sunday without giving 150% in a grand final against Sydney FC, because I've never seen a guy more heartbroken in my life than what I saw Kevin Muscat after the 2010 grand final against Sydney FC. So this is the ultimate revenge for both teams, really. The ultimate revenge for victory. We've always been waiting for a Sydney FC away grand final after what happened in 2010, but also Sydney FC will be looking for their bit of revenge after us knocking them off in 2015 as well. So it's going to be a very, very good game of football. About 7,500 to 8,000 victory fans also travelling, which will be good to be a part of, and a sold-out Allianz Stadium. I'm just hoping the pitch can hold up as well, because I just don't want the grand finals to be ruined by a very, very poor pitch, because there'll be a lot of eyes on it.
Unfortunately, it seems inevitable that...
Yeah, considering it's going to be a rugby union game before it, like the night before it.
Couldn't they do this at, like, ANZ Stadium or something?
They could have, but I don't reckon they would have sold it out, and I think...
It needs to be sold out.
Yeah, it needs to be sold out for a grand final, and... There was talks yesterday of the Waratahs moving their rugby union game to North Sydney Oval, but that's been knocked on the head, and that's nothing against the Waratahs or anything, but they literally, North Sydney Oval couldn't put that spectacle on for them in the space of like 5 days' notice. If they had had about 2 weeks more notice, then maybe, and I think that's probably something the FFA should have looked into instead of waiting until the week of the grand final. But again, there's only so much you can do about that, but hopefully, I think it will be played basically in a cow paddock, but hopefully the pitch can hold up. But I just know I'm going to be in the car to Sydney on Saturday night, and I'm going to see photos on social media of like a rugby scrum that's like dug up the whole fucking pitch or something like that, and it's just going to be very, very interesting to see how Sunday goes down.
Well, we're going to find out on Sunday, Jake, how the pitch holds up, because that is all we have time for today. Just a quick prediction before we go of the final score.
I think Sydney FC will win 2-0, but if I was to say victory have a chance, I think we'll win 2-1 after extra time.
Well, if there's any team that's going to go there and win, it is Melbourne Victory. I'm going to go for a Sydney win. I think they're going to win 1-0, thanks to a VAR goal. That is, again, controversial. we'll obviously be back next week for our, looks like probably our final episode of the season, of the A-League. We'll be back talking about everything to do with the A-League that happened, the aftermath of the grand final. We'll look ahead to the Socceroos. And then and that'll be that for the A-League until next season. So until next week though, Jake.
Have a nice. I'm on top of the world, hey. I'm on top.